You're listening to the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, the 72nd episode, The Slight Edge of Tech.
Cool. I have a confession to make.
Go for it.
I signed up for Vine this week.
Yeah, me too. Why did you sign up for Vine?
I read a really good review.
Because you like porn.
Yeah, that was it. And I was like, yes, no, that was not it. No. But I read a good review on it where he was talking about where one of the things that Vine has done is it has obviously they simplified video making way
down. Right.
But what they did in that process was they took away a lot of the really bad things about video. AKA being long and boring.
Yes, which we have become huge fans of the short video clip.
Yes. And we have?
Yeah, with our, like, we text videos to each other, short video clips.
Oh, okay. Yes, thank you. I felt like that was a reference to something else and you were being sarcastic, but you're serious. Yeah, no, how we...
The length of the show, you mean? Short,
yeah. we do send each other short videos instead of, which are video messages essentially. Anyways, so Vine gives you that 6 seconds and you have to clip it together and that's kind of it. There's no editing or whatever. And so his point was, he goes, this is going to do for video what Instagram is doing for pictures, where it is going to turn non-photographers into people who take pictures.
Right.
You know, they're not professionals by any means, but it doesn't matter. Now they are taking pictures and documenting their life and, you know, excited about it. And his thesis, whatever, is that Vine is going to do the same thing for video. People who used to never take video are going to start doing it because it's so easy to do. You don't have to worry about editing it later on. You don't have to worry about special effects. Just pull it out. You got 6 seconds. You can pause it if you need to, and you're done. And eventually, you might be able to add other frills and features and stuff like that, but it's going to turn people...
Sepia filters?
Yeah. Dude. Well, what is it? It's Social Cam allows you to do all of that stuff right now for free, which is cool. And, you know, quite honestly, with Vine, you can download them. They said the only weird part is you can't upload a video and then chop it down to the 6 seconds, which that would be... Once they get to that point, I think that will you actually see a major shift in there. Because for someone like me, that's annoying. That I just, anyways, this is low fidelity thing. I want to be able to add filters, take a lot of video, and then if I have the option, edit it down or just crop it.
Right.
Anyways, so after reading that, I was like, okay, I'm gonna check this thing out. And so I actually downloaded it. And not to steal all of your thunder, when I did download it, I got a little warning.
Yeah. So it is officially rated NC-17. You have to verify that you're over 17 years of age before you can use it. Because
which I did verify.
Yeah. Wait, you verified the porn or that you're over 17? You were over
17. I am over 17. That I'm not following anybody right now and all I'm getting are the editor picks and trendings, I feel like they're not going to have that issue anymore. So I think I'm safe.
That was the thing though. I mean, that was like, it was like a full on like porn clip popped into the editor's choice. Early on, that's what started this whole hubbub, was everybody was like, what the heck is this? I can't, what the heck, what?
What
part
a boneheaded
of was,
move.
I know.
I mean,
well, it was, you know, it's Twitter has never regulated what content goes onto their feeds. And so they didn't think about it. It's the same philosophy that they've always taken. They're very open. They're very free. They don't regulate what you can do. And it just, they just didn't think about it really like through, they didn't think it through. Cause there's a lot of, you know, not safe for work content on Twitter. You just know not to go to it. And because of the nature of the community around Twitter, it doesn't tend to make it to the top of their, you know, hey, these are cool tweets that are going on in your world. And so they just didn't, they hadn't worked that out yet. It was a new group. People were able to kind of drive it one direction or another. I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think it will hurt Vine that it has that warning now, because it's like, you know, because it makes everybody think twice and they go into it and it sets an expectation of,
yeah, but Craigslist has that same warning.
Yeah. And that's a good point. And I've, you know, and I've surfed a bunch of videos on Vine indiscriminately and haven't found anything of questionable nature. I think it's an interesting flag, and I think it's unfortunate for Vine because I think it will on adoption somewhat, but I don't actually think it's that big of a deal.
Yeah, that's fair. But the big deal is that we're on it.
Right.
You can follow me, I guess. I might follow you back if I recognize you. I've already had two people follow me, and I'm just like, I don't know anybody
follow me. What the heck?
Not quite ready to. Well, that's because I uploaded a video that was quite cute, actually.
It was
my dog sitting there, and I just took like 10 different angles, like half second shots.
That's funny.
There he is. But yeah.
Cool.
So another thing that I did.
Yeah.
Did I do it this week?
Oh my goodness.
I think so.
I had a
busy week, as you can tell. Is I watched the very first episode of House of Cards.
Yeah. How was it?
It was good. That, you know, so as you know, I don't subscribe to Netflix anymore because I'm too cool for them. But they made it so that you could watch the first episode with that lady's flipping you off in the picture. But they made it so that you can watch the first episode without having to sign up. It's just there.
Yeah, which is smart.
Yeah, exactly. So you get someone like me, or you know, maybe not me, who goes, oh, I'll watch this, I'm interested in it. And then presumably you get very interested and hooked by it and are like, oh, I'm going to sign up for Netflix so I could watch all this. And I'm not going to, but I wanted to. Because the whole premise behind the show is very intriguing. And this was pointed out to me. I could theoretically sign up for a month, binge watch the entire thing, and then cancel my subscription if I wanted to. And so I only pay $7, which would be significantly cheaper than if I had to download the entire thing on like iTunes or, you know, buy a cable.
That would be cheaper. I think one of the interesting things about it, in my humble opinion, is that, you know, it's sort of the future. So there's like, for video content, there's three types of way to show movies, right? There's shorts, there's full length feature movies, and then there's TV shows and TV series.
And that's sort of the tradition, those are
your like three venues revenues for doing video in a professional way. Short videos obviously are very similar to movies in that there's no real fixed length, there's no real fixed format outside of the fact that one is about a half, or about, you know, is less than 15 minutes generally, and the whereas the other one is generally more than an hour and a half and less than seven.
So what would you put this podcast as?
We are movies.
Or are we a series?
We're documentaries. Okay, that's a weird question. Well, this is actually interesting. This is an interesting – you know what? This is exactly what we're going to get into. So let's talk about, like, you know, how – you know, what are we compared to radio? Like, we are kind of – you know, especially if you're listening to this via the podcast, this is sort of like a radio
experience.
Which
we know most of you are.
Right. You know, this is sort of like a radio experience. You're listening to audio over your speakerphone.
I would say, we are not, even though you can watch the video, we're not necessarily intended for you to watch the video. That's right. Not a requirement.
Right. If James puts something up in the air, I usually try to say what it is so that
those who are listening.
Yeah, so they're listening. I don't know what the heck he's talking about.
All I do is this with the app and see how that works. Right?
It's fantastic. Yeah. And sometimes I just let it slide because I think it's funny. And they do it on the radio shows that I listen, the one that I listen to all the time, they do it every once in a while. And it's pretty funny when you realize that they have completely forgotten that nobody can see what they're doing.
And then they read off the 20 emails of people who write in like, hey, what were you talking about there?
Exactly. What was I saying? So, but the premise is like on radio there, it's really, really, really well regulated. They have intros, they have outros, they have segment lengths. They can push segment lengths a little bit, but total airtime is fixed. I mean, the amount of time that you spend on the air versus commercial time versus when your breaks are and everything, it's all hard, it's fixed. And it creates a certain flow to the program. They put content into certain areas. They do a lot of pre-planning. Whereas with us, we create a big long show, you know, big long list of topics we want to talk about. We sort that through, and then we come up with all these like different hierarchies of opening articles, full body articles, extra articles to the end, and then we just kind of go until we feel like we've talked enough. So it sometimes is an hour and a half, sometimes it's usually around 2 hours, and then sometimes it's, you know, 3 hours if we're getting a little bit wacky.
I think that's our record.
Yes. So there's this very, it's very fluid. There's no fixed length. It just kind of, we have a target, but we just go as long as we need to go. And what's interesting is when you read a book, and actually this is something that I discovered, like, you know, for me writing, it's trying to figure out, you know, how do you do chapters? What are your chapter lengths? Do you do chapters? Because some books don't have any chapters, or they have like,
I hate those books.
Part one, two, and three. Yeah, I wouldn't say I hate those books, but I don't like them as much. I like chapters. And for me, it was one of the earliest struggles for figuring out how to structure and write a book was figuring out the chapter. How do you do chapters? And for me, what I realized is what I'm actually really good at is writing short stories, structuring short story plots. And so what I did was I came up with 13 short stories that pretty much one began where the other one ended, and you string those into 13, you know, episodes of this longer show or this longer story that becomes the book. But it's very flexible. Some of my chapters are 3 pages, some of them are 4 pages, or 14 pages. I mean, and what
those are short chapters.
Oh man.
And so what you do is chapters are very short.
Actually, I think I get up to 26 pages at one time. But what you do is you get this arc of what I was looking for was, where's my narrative hook? Where's my rise to some sort of a climax? What's the climax? And then how do I resolve that before the next chapter? And that's what decides the chapter length. And the reason why this is all important is because Netflix is like the first time where you can have a series, like a traditional TV series, that does art that way, which is a lot more natural. It's a lot better writing, and what it allows, I think it will be really, really desirable to writers to be able to break free of this whole idea of a traditional, of a traditional TV show where you have fixed lengths, fixed breaks, you have to hit the action here, and you can actually do a long show and develop an emotional connection to this plot point just a little bit longer, and then you can, next week, you can have a short story, because you're going to get right to it, and it's just a little bit, you know, it's a little bit faster, and so you could really start to play with the, not just the story, not just the acting, not just the visuals, but you could play with the pacing, which, in my opinion, of great movies, part of what makes them great is their pacing, is that sort of when you're slow, when you're long, when things happen, and they just kind of end when they end, you know, and then you know, the difficult part is having...
I have seen TV shows where the end, you could tell it was rushed, and you went, they just needed 10 more minutes, and it would have been 1,000 times better. I think Legend of Korra was exactly that, where they just needed 10 more minutes, and they didn't have it.
There wasn't enough story for another episode, but there was too much for the episode they were given. And yeah, and so it just feels rushed at the end. And all of a sudden on Netflix, writers can do that. You know, the tough part and the hard, challenging part, and this any good editor will tell you, is to know when to end. And so there will be a lot of bad content because it just goes on for too long because people you know, want to express all of their ideas. And so it's not going to be all sunshine and flowers. But I think some of the best series out there will start to crop up in this context where you're not just looking at performances and the traditional elements of a good TV show, but you're also looking at pacing, and it gives you the freedom to do stuff, especially telling, you know, and one of the cool parts about series, in my opinion, is that it allows you to tell really long series. If we go back to, you know, Avatar, The Last Airbender, the predecessor to Korra, the whole idea, you know, the idea that it's a 3-season, it's about 60 episodes, but it's a complete story arc, but it's a really long story arc. There's a reason why M. Night Shyamalan was able to fit it into a movie, because it's a tremendous amount of story. You can't boil down 10, 12 hours of story into a 2-hour movie and not lose something. And, so... because it's a different type of story. It's a longer story. It's more investment. But to be able to play with it, you know, I actually, from the art perspective of it, it's a really exciting venue. And I'm glad to see that Netflix's, you know, initial reaction was to allow the writers to do that. And I think what you'll find is you'll find people that, you know, that have money to invest, have a really good idea, but really feel like they need that place to they can't do it on TV for whatever reason. Needed to just, I think you're going to start to get really creative people that are going to start looking at Netflix and going, you know, that's not a bad idea. It's not a bad idea at all. And if House of Cards makes enough money and they're able to negotiate stuff, I could see things where I could see guys like Steven Spielberg getting on it, where he's, you know, he's that kind of a creative guy. And sometimes, you know, it's like Band of Brothers. Like, he would do these, like, 6-show miniseries. Nobody was doing 6-show miniseries. Like, what the heck are these? Mm-hmm. And, you know, but he had an idea. It wasn't big enough for a TV show. It was too big for a movie. So he came up with this idea, and he had enough money and gumption to do it. But I think if he could go back in time and redo some of those mini series where you're not forced into the confines of the TV breaks, I bet he would, in a heartbeat, would say, yeah, that's what I wanted to do. It would have been about the same length. I just wish I didn't have to fit into the same time frames every time and hit action and stuff at the right moment. I wish I could have just had the flexibility of a few minutes here and there. And
so are you a Netflix subscriber?
I am.
Did you watch the show?
I haven't.
The series?
I saw the trailer, thought it looked kind of interesting, and then completely forgot about it and was reading about this morning and was like, I need to watch House of Cards.
I mean, there's a part of me that, yeah, I agree with you. I think this is the future. And, I mean, that's how you support it, right? You sign up.
Good point.
And then you watch it and you let up the views and they go, okay, clearly it's working. I mean, yeah. It's interesting. It's very cool.
Right.
I also like some of the stuff that Hulu is doing with some of their original pieces too. I think they tend to stick more, they're playing a little more traditional than what you're talking about, but it still is cool.
But it's that freedom to do those non-traditional things, the really big name guys that can afford to do these kinds of projects into the game. That's when things are going to change. You know, the idea of long episodic movies that have relatively short episodes, you know, I think, you know, they're basically 8-hour, you know, House of Cards is basically a 12-hour movie with 12 episodes, and that's what they made, and, you know, and or 12 parts, I should say, you know, which is an incredibly long movie, and I wouldn't sit through that, but I might sit through 12 episodes.
Yeah.
It's funny. That has actually hurt my TV watching when I realized that that's what I've been doing is I've been, especially like long series that like have like 9 seasons or 10 seasons. I'm like, and there's like 15 episodes a season, like House, for example. I've realized that that's basically a 100-hour movie that I've been was watching, and I just didn't want to spend that much time watching movies. It's just weird. Of course, I got to like the 9th season. We should, you know, punch it through because I really like it, but finish it off. But it's that, you know, Oh, I don't think I'll watch very many long-term TV series like that in the future. I think House of the Cards is right in my kind of getting to your like maximum length for me, about one season miniseries type stuff. You know.
Okay.
So, oh, interesting.